Chapter 9. As the sunrise burns the edge of the Silver Sea, the team shuffles one by one into the belly of the Halo, gathering in the main hold. Jazz comes up last. Everyone is talking. Temin mumbling about how he doesn't want to miss X-Wing practice, Jom chastising the boy because it's called training and not practice. Sinjir saying something about how he forgot to grab that bottle of Ciroc, and hey, does anyone have an extra bottle of Ciroc? Because Ciroc, that's why. It's all background noise to the bounty hunter. The noise in the foreground is the static of her own thoughts, crackling and snapping right at the front of her mind. Her skin tingles with an unusual kind of anxiety, one she's not used to, one that is born of a division inside her. A fissure she cannot seem to close, an injury that won't heal. At her core, Jazz feels like two different people. She has always told herself that everything she does is for her own self. I am not here to make friends, being an oft-repeated phrase anytime some weapons trader or bartender or client wants to do more than talk about the business at hand. That's the line she drops in their laps. Not friends. Don't need them. Sorry, thank you, goodbye. And she's never had much of a cause to carry either. The only purpose she possesses is to pay her debts. Debts that actually aren't really her own at all, are they? They're her aunt's. Sugi's.
Damn you, Sugi.
Jazz loved her aunt. Loved her more than words can say. And all the while she'd watch the woman fritter away her contracts. She'd bail on jobs if they violated her honor. Or she'd do them her own way and burn the client in the process. Or she'd side with her team, or she'd take on rinky-dink low-pay or no-pay work to protect some new group of underdogs or slaves or pathetic deviants. Or. In the end, it all added up to one thing. Sugi owed more than she took in. Those debts mounted. And now those debts belong to Jazz. She always told herself,
I'll never be like Aunt Sugi.
This job is a merciless one, and it requires rather extreme moral calisthenics. You go where the credits flow. You take the target out however you have to. She doesn't have to be friendly, but she damn sure has to be fast, and she has to be good. That's how you earn a name. That's how you get the next job. Even still, she tells herself that she's here because right now, the New Republic is the winning side. They don't have the whole galaxy pinned down and buttoned up all nice and neat yet, no, but the stars are drifting in that direction. One by one, systems shake free the yoke of the Empire's oppression and move to independence. And the chaos of that independence drives them inevitably to the New Republic. A single banner. One government. A new galactic order. Whatever. And if that breaks apart and falls away, as it could, then Jazz tells herself,
I'll flip.
She can swing like a monkey lizard from a broken branch to a safe one. From the Republic back to the Empire. Or to a separatist system instead. Could be she'll tuck herself into the pocket of some credit-flush crime lord. Long as it's not the Hutts, as Sugi never had luck with those treacherous piles of humid guano. Certainly there will be a number of ex-imperial bankers striking out on their own. They'll need enforcers. They'll need someone to go secure their loans, break some legs, twist some tentacles, blacken an eye or another sensory organ. She has always told herself, pragmatism above ideals, self above others, the mind over the heart, the job above all else. This is that, right? And yet, here she is, with a team.
Ugh.
Sinjir looks over, gives her a wink even as she tries to remind herself,
you're not here to make friends.
and across the table is Jom, who has this look in his eye, this hungry look, like he wants to reach across the table and gobble her right up. And may the stars help her, she feels a rising heat, and by all the gods of the great beyond, what happened to her? Is this who she really is? Soft, like Sugi? Maybe her aunt hides within her like a ghost, summoned to the flesh when she got soft. Or maybe Sugi knew something special all along. Something Jazz is only just learning. She doesn't like it.
Burn it out with fire, she thinks.
Nora stands there. Nora, whom Jazz feels warmly toward, which makes her wonder suddenly if her brain has been taken by some kind of parasite, like that Nymoidian tick larva that makes you crave blood, and spreads out a special deck of Pazak cards. Jazz is thankful for the sudden distraction. These are not your standard cards. These are the New Republic's most wanted. On each, a face and a name, listing the Imperials the New Republic wants captured. Some of them are big players presently operating within the known Empire. Others have gone AWOL, like Geddy. Speaking of Geddy, Nora grabs that card and hands it to her son.
Tim, if you would.
He nods and takes it over to a board hanging from the wall, next to the oxygen recycler. Temin takes a little blob of tacky goo from a can, dabs it to the back of the card, and sticks it up there, alongside nearly a dozen others. Among them, the targets from Akiva, Pandion, Tashu, Shale, Crassus, and those they've taken since, Commandant Strad, Prefect Kosh, Moffs Keong and Nile, Vice General Adambo, and ex-ISB Minister Van Eowelt. Nora says what Jazz already knows.
Geddy was poisoned. Likely the poison hidden in his spice.
Jazz asks if it was the fungus, and Nora confirms.
As if there were any doubt,
Jazz thinks.
I know who did it,
Jazz says. Eyes turn toward her, expectantly.
A bounty hunter, like me. Mercurial Swift. He loves poisons. And that mycotoxin is one of his signature favorites.
Jom grunts. Though he saves half a moment to pin his gaze on her, he smiles. She tries not to smile back, and fails.
Damn it.
That means what?
He asks.
The Empire has sent killers after their own?
We don't know the Empire engineered the killing,
Nora says.
But it makes sense, right?
Temin asks.
I mean, come on. Geddy left the Empire, and if we picked him up, maybe he'd flip on others.
Good,
Jom says.
That's easy, then. We suss out which ones are AWOL, and we concentrate on the others instead. Let the Empire eject its own garbage. Saves us the effort.
Robs us of the credits, too,
Jazz says, her brow knitted.
We're not doing this for the credits.
You're not doing this for the credits. Me, it's the only reason.
You don't care about the galaxy at all? Don't care about doing justice for the people? And kicking the Empire out the airlock?
She shrugs, even though inside that war between her two halves goes from a cold war to a very hot one.
No, I don't care. I care about the me who is on this adventure. And besides, if all of you cared so much about the people of the galaxy, why did our last job concentrate on taking out Geddy instead of Kanker? Geddy was just sitting there, high on spice, hurting mostly nobody. But Kanker runs a slave network. We didn't take him out. We didn't free any slaves. What good did we do?
We had orders,
Burrell protests.
Spoken like a true Imperial,
Jazz snaps back. She's revving his engine now, she knows that. But past the sharp teeth of her sarcasm lies a real question. What good are they doing? The better question being, why does she care? Jom stands, his nostrils flaring. She's happy to have made him mad. It thrills her, inexplicably. She's tempted to drag him into the bunk room for another sparring match. But Nora suddenly raises her voice to say,
"None of this is relevant right now. We can talk about the hows and whys of what we do later. Right now we've been asked, quietly, very quietly, to look into someone who has gone missing."
"Who is it?"
Jazz asks. Temin whistles.
"I bet it's either Skywalker or Solo."
That earns him some looks, including a jaw-dropper from Nora. But Jazz can buy it. She says,
"That tracks. Two heroes of the Battle of Endor, and I haven't seen Solo around here in months. Skywalker for even longer."
The look on Nora's face tells the tale true. It's one of those two. She pinches the bridge of her nose and nods.
"Yes, Han Solo is missing."
"General Solo," Burrell corrects.
And Nora corrects him in turn.
"He resigned his commission."
"He's just a smuggler and not our concern."
"I say he's our concern," Nora says. "Besides, this comes from on high, from a source very high up in the New Republic."
"Leia,"
Jazz says.
"That's Princess Leia to you," Nora says. "And how did you know that? Did you bug my chambers?"
"No. I know because I'm a professional. And because Scuttlebutt says the two of them have been a thing since Endor or before. Makes sense that he goes missing, and she's the one who wants him found. Understandable she'd come to us. Smart credits say she's using Wedge as an intermediary."
"I heard they got married," Temin says.
"Wedge and Princess Leia?"
Jom asks, incredulous.
"Solo and Princess Leia."
"Oh."
Sinjir claps his hands.
"Bonus trivia, she's pregnant."
A chorus of retorts and refutations rise in response, but Sinjir crosses his arms and jeers at them.
"What? Don't look at me like I'm some malfunctioning protocol droid spitting babble. Whatever your jobs are, mine is to read people like they're a menu at the local automat. The way she dresses, the way she carries herself, the rosy flush to her cheeks, her hands drifting unconsciously to her stomach. Pregnant."
That last word he says in a sing-songy way.
"Pregnant."
Mr. Bones echoes, also singing, except his song is a disharmonic glitch ballad. Everyone winces.
"Stop,"
Sinjir tells the droid.
"Roger, roger."
All of this is melodramatic and insignificant, Jazz thinks.
"Do we have anything on Solo? Any leads at all?"
"We have one,"
Nora answers.
"Leia sent over the Falcon's movements. Solo was trying to single-handedly liberate Kashyyyk, but something went wrong, and his co-pilot, Chewbacca the Wookiee, went missing. We have a pattern representing his search."
Nora pulls up a holomap. It fills the air around them with orbs representing glittering systems, each linked by a shining, shimmering hyperspace route. Nora focuses in on a region near Wild Space.
"He could be in one of a dozen systems."
"It's a start,"
Jom says. Sinjir thrusts a long, pointy finger down on the table. He hops it from card to card.
"Maybe some of our erstwhile Imperial guests have some information. I'll canvass our captives."
"I can check with some of my contacts in the underworld,"
Jazz says.
"If Solo's truly desperate, he may have been clumsy enough to have drawn attention to himself."
"Good," Nora says. "I'll dust off the moth and fly it out to where Chewbacca was taken by the Empire. Maybe if we can find a clue there as to where Solo's co-pilot ended up, it'll help us narrow down our options."
Jom nods.
"Let's get to work, then."
They each know their job. Jazz heads out, willfully getting ahead of Jom to make sure that he and the rest of the crew know she's no heart-swollen star calf, no moon-eyed waif, no lust-struck fool. But again, that war of thoughts within her. Why do you care what they think? Aren't you protesting over much? Admit it. Right now, you'd climb him like a ladder. It makes her grouchy. Outside, Sinjir awaits to make her even grouchier. He's grinning big and broad, with the puckishness of a boy who hid his mother's credit purse.
What?
She asks, defensive. You, he says.
Me what?
You never once asked.
Never once asked what? Speak plainly, Sin, or I'll boot you off this platform. I'm in no mood for your brand of devilry.
What it paid.
I said speak plainly.
He rolls his eyes, obviously impatient with her lack of getting it. You never asked what it would pay to go find the missing Solo, Jazz. You didn't ask about a bounty or a reward. Not any of it.
I...
Her breath catches in her chest. A very real and very cold panic rises inside her like a cyclone of sleet. He's right. She didn't. Worse, she didn't even give a thought to it.
I knew there'd be a reward,
she lies to him, and really to herself as well.
Leia's accounts run deep. Of course rescuing Solo would be a particularly big payout. And even if not, having an Alderaanian princess owe you a favor is not insignificant.
She tells herself that all these things are so true that she must have just taken them on as assumed. Of course it would be worth her while.
Look at you. Such precious backpedaling.
Eat slim, Rathvelis.
He chortles and winks. She stomps off.
I'm not here to make friends.
She repeats this in her head again and again, over and over, until it's all just gabbling noise.